that's what we're trying to do by linking law enforcement together. And I feel like that's what IFCI is trying to do with retail and banking and law enforcement all together. So it's like the same path, just trying to get people to realize we're all working on it together or it doesn't work.
Introducing The Protectors, inside criminal minds from around the world. Presented by the IAFCI, leaders in safeguarding consumers from fraud and scams for more than 50 years. And now your hosts, International President Mark Solomon and Chairman of the Board Michael Carroll.
Hello, everybody. This is Mike Carroll, International Chairman of the International Association of Financial Crimes Investigators. I am with Mark Solomon in beautiful Oklahoma City for our 2025 annual IFCI conference. Mark, how you doing?
It is going great. Let's hear from the audience. How is it so far, folks? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hey, Mark, it's standing room only. In fact, there's people outside trying to get in. We might have to call security.
Yeah, I think you need to get your glasses checked. But anyway, but this has been an incredible week. We're on our last day here in Oklahoma City. Let's give it up for the Oklahoma chapter. Where is Don? Where is Sharon? They're busy working, but let's give it up for them, please. So, you know, this is our fourth year linking up with Modified Media. Doug Taylor, Chris Warner, incredible people. And like I say, you don't know how much work it goes into this. And we wanted to share a little bit, see how the music is made here or the podcast, but also honor our members, our subject matter experts that have been on the show. And why are we doing this? Mike, I want to start off with you, and we're going to get our guest in here very shortly. But Mike, this was a vision of yours, and can you explain maybe to the audience why you came up with the idea for a podcast?
Well actually, it was now retired inspector in charge, Phil Bartlett, out of New York division. He was on the board of advisors, and he says, Mike, we got to reach the younger generation. We should get a podcast going. And I know a guy named Doug Taylor that was doing podcasts for the inspection service out of New York, Behind the Badge. And that's how it all started. We reached out to Doug, we hit it off right away, and Chris, and we just had our 100th episode.
100, yeah, 100. So, hey, with us today, we have a very special person, a dear friend of the IFCI. She is on the advisory board for the IFCI, and she is also the chief of the Financial Surveillance Unit for the U.S. Marshals, the very first federal law enforcement in the U.S.
What?
Yeah, marshals.
Oh, here we go again.
Yeah. All right, how many people think it's the marshals? All right. How many say it's the postal inspectors? Okay.
It's well, a tie.
Well, no, I don't know. We're going to have to battle this out, I think, during the show. But the incredible Caitlin Kent. Katie, thank you for coming
to the podcast. Thanks for having me.
All right.
Thank you so much. Right. Happy to be here.
Yeah.
Happy to fight with Mike.
Caitlin, can I just put out a disclaimer, because Mark's going to bring it up today. Benjamin Franklin was not my first partner when I was with the inspection service.
We have pictures, so you can't deny it. So, Caitlin, how did your journey begin with the IFCI?
Yeah, so my journey with the Marshal Service has been the last, like, 17 years. I've been kind of all over doing fugitive work in multiple states, kind of up and down the East Coast. And I ended up in a specialty unit, and we focus on the financial aspects of locating fugitives. And the first person said, you can't do anything pretty much without IFCI. So here we are and joined the board. And now my whole team is a member, and we haven't looked back since. That's
awesome.
Been great.
I do have to tell you, Kate, when I was a U.S. Postal Inspector, we had a great relationship with the U.S. Marshals. We worked together a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of our cases, they end up being a fugitive, and we work with the Marshals to track them down. So kudos to the U.S. Marshals.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, we love, that's a big thing about the Marshal Service. Like, we have these giant task forces with multiple state, local, federal partners, usually have postal on our task forces. So it's like just a way to all work together.
So how many years have you been with the U.S. Marshals?
Just over 17.
Wow.
Yep.
She looks so young. You joined when you were 10?
Correct.
Oh,
yes,
good,
thank you for good. Recognizing so, that. Right. Yeah. Yep, that's the correct math.
So, Katie, for those that might be in the room or listening to a podcast, they may not know a lot about the Financial Surveillance Unit, but can you explain it and what your mission is and how you assist and the apprehension of fugitives?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Marshals Service works all federal warrants issued by federal judges. And then we also help state and local partners with any violent crime warrants that are issued throughout state and local partnerships. So in order to do that, there's a lot of ways to find people, right? But why not use money? And we also realize that, yeah, we go after homicide, sexual assault, fugitives, but these are the same people using fraudulent techniques to stay on the run. So having a unit that specialized in fraud techniques and understands the banking world and has banking partners to work with has been really successful for our team. So we've caught a lot of people based on focusing just in that one kind of tiny aspect.
So I'm thinking that being a member of the IFCI, that would be helpful in tracking down these people, trying to track them down financially, where the last purchase they might have made or something like that. So I think the IFCI helps you out with that, right?
Oh, it's priceless. Literally, it is priceless. I mean, to understand from a banking side what processes they have, how things work on that end, how fraud is done, the most recent and current trends in fraud, you know, that's what these guys are using to stay on the run. So if we can understand on the fraud side, then we can actually find them on the violent crime side. So it all links, you know, right together.
So, and I've actually seen the U.S. Marshals work firsthand. I've seen it when my daughter was 18 years old, she started dating, and I reached out to Katie, and I said, Katie, can you surveil her just to make sure she doesn't get any trouble? So they set up on her for several weeks, and,
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what we're here for.
And then the boyfriend somehow disappeared. So, but anyway. But, you know, you talk about these other crimes, and, you know, I think when you think of the U.S. Marshals, you think of those violent crimes, homicides, drug traffickers, and stuff like that. Can you talk about that connection between the financial aspect of tracking these individuals down?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we do focus on violent crime. That is the fugitives that we're going after. But we've really seen it link so much in the training that we've gotten here. You know, we had a guy a couple weeks ago where we could tell because of the training that we'd had here and some of our partners that he was committing mortgage fraud while on the run for a sexual assault. So when we saw that and we reached out to the mortgage company and they provided everything that they could on him, we were able to locate him because we said, hey, listen, he's actually defrauding millions of people with this mortgage fraud claim, then he works for your company. And so we were able to kind of mix those two things. Normally it was like, well, let's focus on the sexual assault side of it. Instead, we're able to use kind of the financial training that we learned and locate fraud, which was able to find him, so.
You know, we talked earlier. Can you tell us about another case, the Dateline case? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. We had a case out of New England area where one of my wonderful inspectors.
Kevin, stand up, Kevin Perot. And we made him wear shorts today because he has some really good looking legs, right, ladies? All right, okay.
So he is on, you can watch 48 Hours Dateline episode about the Pan case, which is a homicide case. Guy had an infatuation with one of his other college people in MIT, and he actually went and murdered her boyfriend. Went on the run, and that case was huge. And Kevin was going after him for months and months, and we were trying to, you know, kind of track him down. And we knew his family was helping him. And when we stopped and interviewed the family, the parents said, oh, we don't speak English at all. And they had pulled the mom over on the side of the road. She's like, no English, nothing. So, you know, a couple of days later, Kevin gets a call from one of our banking partners in the IFCI, and she says, you will never believe this. I have the recorded call of her calling in speaking perfect English into her bank account. So we're like,
somebody
okay, great.
Somebody lied to federal law enforcement?
I know, it's
oh
shocking.
God, it never happens, right?
Never happens to us. But because of the partnership, we were able to say, hold on a second. So they went back and pulled her in for an interview and saying, we know you speak English. You got to talk to us. And was able to break through finally and catch him. So, I mean, it's priceless.
And I actually watched, obviously, Dateline, and also he's presented several times, Connecticut and other places around the country about the case. And Kevin, it really started right with a receipt, a single receipt in a car, right? And the officers that were doing the search of the vehicle, they really didn't come up with much. And Kevin said, find me some receipts. And it turned out to be a single receipt that really, you know, with the cooperation of financial institutions, the great work of the U.S. Marshals, that he was taken into custody, right?
Yeah, it's amazing what one tiny little breadcrumb can go after. Yeah. I mean, just since we've been here this week, we had another homicide case in New England, and it's the same thing, a single receipt. And from that, it's just snowballed into hopefully catching him today. So,
you have like a unit for tracking down financial transactions, but how about finding people like on social media, things like that, finding suspects? Do you have like a unit that just specializes
in
that?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a cyber unit, and they're fantastic. So they focus on social media sites, streaming, gaming. You'd be shocked. I mean, back when I was running the streets and I would have a case and I'd go on social media and the guy's like, hey, we're having a barbecue tomorrow at my house at 123 Main Street. I'm like, great, I will be there, sir. Yeah. So it's amazing what they put on social media, even when they're a fugitive on the run. Thank God.
And I could tell you a quick story. It happened really 2 weeks ago. And at our financial institution, there was a social media threat, a very specific threat to an executive leader of a financial institution. And we identified the person, or we thought we did. And we had a town and city that they lived in who made the threat. So knowing, you know, me, the first thought was I'm going to IFCI website and looking up for law enforcement in that area. And I kind of struck out, which is very rare, I have to be honest with you. Like I said, it was kind of a rural area. So I called Jan Moffitt. I said, Jan, can you check the old registrations that we have for previous conferences? I need law enforcement in this area. And she didn't even look. She goes, Mark, are you stupid? And I'm like, yes, but, you know, I'm like, well, why? She's like, call Katie. And I was like, oh, darn it. So I reached out to Katie, and within 15 minutes, she linked us up with the U.S. Marshal that covered that territory, who got the detective from that town involved. And they went and interviewed and did a threat assessment about this individual. It, you know, in the day and age that we're in, those threats are taken very seriously. And it brought ease to our financial institution and the person that was being threatened, that law enforcement got involved quickly. And I think this gentleman will not make the same mistake twice. So, but you know, that's what this collaboration could do with the U.S. Marshals, the IFCI. And like I said, we're so glad to have you and your team with us.
Yeah, that's the thing about the Marshal Service is sometimes, as everyone knows, the federal government, state and local government, they get siloed. Like everybody's concentrating on their own thing, right? Trying to fight crime, trying to make the community better in a better way. And I feel like that's what we're trying to do by linking law enforcement together. And I feel like that's what IFCI is trying to do with like retail and banking and law enforcement all together. So it's like the same path, just trying to get people to realize we're all working on it together or it doesn't work.
Yeah, Caitlin, we mentioned before you're on the advisory board for the IFCI. Thank you. Maybe there might be some non-members here. What do you think the number one benefit is to be an IFCI member?
Well, I got to come to Oklahoma 2 days early, so I think that's, I got it before the rain and everything, you know? No, it's good because I think it's even further insight, right? Like I get to be listening in on things and trends and conversations and bigger part of what you guys have coming next. I know even in this board meeting, there was a lot of talk about international partners and making the chapters internationally bigger, and the Marshal Service just took over Interpol. And so for us to say, hey, listen, we want to get in on that. We want to put that all together. It's so much more helpful, right? It's just like an extra layer of all trying to work together.
So, Kate, I want to give you a hypothetical. If Mike and I were the only two males left on Earth,
I don't know where this is going. Okay.
Yeah, but which one would you pick to go on the island with, either Mike or me?
So, is there just like a lone island that I could hang out on?
That's it. Okay. You got to pick one of us to be your friend for the rest of your life.
Well,
I'll make sure you get the mail.
Let me see, Mike. Who's the oldest federal law enforcement agency?
Oh, Marshals.
Okay, all right, sorry.
Really? Postal inspectors, he just sold you out. Okay, totally.
That was easier than I thought.
But in all seriousness, I did watch a press conference last week, and apparently the U.S. Park Police are the oldest law enforcement agency. Yeah.
A new agency has entered the fight.
Yeah, they're now claiming they are the oldest federal law enforcement, but they started like 20 years after the two of you, so I don't know how they got that, but... So, Katie, you're a leader of this organization. Your job is very busy. You have a child, and that's a lot on your plate. What made you step up and be an advisor on top of all that? And we have a lot of directors and advisors here today. You do this on your own time mostly, you know, on the weekends, on the weeknights. Why did you become a part of that?
Well, I'll tell you, my old boss, Deb, said I had no choice. So, you know, originally it was a voluntold. But then when I got there and I realized what a bigger impact we can have, it's like completely worth it, right? Okay. Like I got into law enforcement to help people, and sometimes that just snowballs into continuing to try and help people.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's been awesome. And as long as you guys will have me, I'll be on the board. So
got it. Lifetime membership. So.
There we go.
Okay, one last question. Is your relationship with other law enforcement agencies great? How about our financial institutions, partnership with them? How important is that?
I can literally not put a price on it. It is unbelievable. I mean, when we go to serve a search warrant, serve a subpoena, and we can't serve it correctly, or we don't have the right verbiage in there, or we didn't send it to the right address, that can delay finding someone who's on the run, who's possibly going to commit another violent crime by days, weeks, months. If we have somebody that we can call, hey, bank X, Y, and Z, you know, I have the subpoena. It's really expedited. Like, what can you do? Where do I serve it? What language do I need in there? And she can tell me the right answer so I get it right the first time. It can save us days or weeks. It can save that person from hurting someone else, right? So it's our partnership with them. If we didn't have it, we wouldn't have a unit, honestly.
All right, we're going to go a little trivia battle right now.
Ooh.
It just came up with this out of the blue. We'll give it a try, okay? Name the first U.S. Marshal.
John Wayne.
All right, Mike, name the first U.S. Postal Inspector.
It wasn't Ben Franklin. He hired the first Postal Inspector. Dottard, last name, no?
I don't know. I think you, no.
I can tell you what year.
All right, go ahead.
1789.
Mike,
year? This is our 250th anniversary. We were 1775.
So he's claiming he's first.
Well, the Postal Service is first.
All right.
Postal Inspectors.
Let's move on.
Let's
bring this to a higher attention. All right.
Okay.
Name as many movies that you know that involve the U.S. Marshals Service.
Ooh, okay. U.S. Marshals, The Fugitive, Con Air, Tombstone, Plain Sight. Gotta throw George Clooney in there, obviously.
Yes. That's pretty good.
Yeah. That's
all right.
Pretty good.
Mike,
yeah.
Name the movies that have U.S. Postal Inspectors in it.
Wall Street. They were in there at the end. They made the arrest.
Okay.
We had a weekly series. Did you have a weekly series on Saturday morning?
No. Don't. You can answer the question. Come on. There's hundreds of U.S. Postal Inspector movies out there. Come on.
Okay, Wall Street. There was, what's his name? Officer and a Gentleman. He played a postal inspector.
No. I think right now Katie's in the lead. So I want to get back to the podcast and you know, I'd love to ask, what do you like about it? You know, is there something new that you'd like to hear? We just did an episode yesterday. It's funny. I got reached out by one of the members who approached us at the booth yesterday and said, what about healthcare fraud? You know, we had some great presentations yesterday and throughout the week on healthcare. And we're like, darn, yeah, we haven't covered it that much. So lo and behold, we had a detective. He said, hey, I got a great healthcare fraud case. So we wound up recording it yesterday. So over the last 3 days, we've captured around 6 episodes, which is great for Mike and I because, you know, we get the subject matter experts all here. When we do this back home, Mike's in Chicago, I'm in Connecticut, Chris is in Florida, and Doug is in Pennsylvania. So like I said, we're spread out. So to be able to come here and have so many experts in the room, it's like I could stay here for 2 weeks and record, but we love this opportunity to be a part of this. So,
and we do it after hours too.
We do. And listen, it's not all perfect, I will tell you. We've had our disagreements. Mike is a little social butterfly. You may not know that, but Mike plays bocce, bowling. He's involved in church charities. He has his own charities. He's involved in basketball. So, like, I always, like, Mike, hey, you good for Tuesday? We're like, yep. All of a sudden, like, Tuesday, an hour before, oh, man, I got bocce tonight. So I love him. I love the guy. But he's busier than anybody else I've ever met. But it just shows his passion. I mean, he's willing to step up, help others. There is not a single person that works as hard. Let's give it up for Mike. All right.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey, Mark, who's made the most guest appearances on the podcast?
We are now up to a tie, so I think it's Kathy Stokes.
Oh, I was going to say my dog.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The other sometimes frustrating thing is Mike has now two dogs, right, at your house? And the dogs like to eat things, including electrical wires. So Mike has to disassemble his equipment every single time we do the podcast and protect it, which means he has to reassemble it. And sometimes the cords get put in the wrong slots, but it's a blast. Like I said, I mean, it's a labor of love. I mean, we're recording with the Modified Media there from beginning to end. In an average episode, we may interview somebody for an hour and a half to get around 30, 35 minutes of content.
Hey, Mark, let me ask you, we just had our 100th episode. Which one sticks out to you?
There's so many. I want to say episode 40, 41 is one that really hit me. And Mike, you actually had worked with the postal inspectors on that, helping them when Laura Kowal went missing. And we met an incredible family. And I could only imagine what they went through. Not only the financial loss, but the loss of their mom. And still not knowing 100%, is it a suicide? Is it a homicide? So, you know, stuff like that. Jordan DeMay, 17-year-old kid who committed suicide. And, you know, when we did that episode, my son was the same age. And to hear the pain of what that family went through and that father. But there's also the resilience of these individuals. They've suffered so much, and they fight so others won't become victims. And that's what, you know. There's so many. What about you, Mike?
Like you mentioned, with Laura Kowal, mom went missing, and I got a call on a Saturday because I'm with the IFCI, and they're like, hey, an inspector called me and said, this mom is missing, trying to track her down. Can you check out her credit cards? She had like 4 credit cards. And being a longtime member of the IFCI, I had like the cell phone numbers for 3 of the investigators, and I called them on that Saturday, and unfortunately, they couldn't find anything, and they found her 4 days later, committed suicide, found her in the Mississippi River. But, you know, one sticks out to me is Seymour Josephson.
Yeah. Yeah, there's another one.
Yeah. And he started a program, What's My Name? I think he's in South Carolina. His daughter thought she was getting in an Uber, and she did not. And they found her the next day. She was murdered. Yeah. And he started up Foundation, What's My Name?
What's My Name? So now, yeah, you know, like just arriving here, taking an Uber, you know, they've made changes where What's My Name? Check the back of the license plate. Stuff like that, and hopefully that will prevent another tragedy from occurring. So, you know, we played a part, especially with Kelly. Kelly, that was the first time she ever shared her story in public on a national stage. She came to our conference last year. And, you know, I think Kate Kleinert, she was introduced to us by AARP, a woman who lost everything, her house burnt down, and was living, you know, in hotels until she could get the insurance. But she lost everything that she had, and she testified last year at the White House in front of 600 agency heads. They take that tragedy and they turn it into triumph, and it's not for themselves, it's for others, so they don't have to go through the same thing. So, but I don't want to get down at the same point. I love hearing our subject matter experts. Like, I'm so proud of this organization, and it's so easy to find an SME to come on. We go to the IFCI like 99% of the time. So we get to shine our stars in the public for what you guys do every day. So why don't we bring Doug and Chris on this? And people don't realize Mike was actually a radio host. How many people knew that or listened to Mike? He was.
The inspection service had a radio program once a week. Don't fall for it. Yep. And it was out in the suburbs of Chicago. But I did that for a year. I got the job because the boss came to my office and said, you got a face for radio. You're going to be the next co-host.
I get that too. So, but Doug, maybe you and Chris want to talk about kind of what you do, you know, not only lining up a guest, the preparation before, the editing and everything before it goes and gets released.
Well, clearly there's a lot that goes into it. I don't know that that's as much interest as what we have learned. Being around these incredible men and women, I don't think many people in the public at large really truly understand what it is that each and every one of you goes through every single day. No one in this room got into this profession to become wealthy, not a single person. And it's the heart and soul of you, the men and women of the IAFCI, What you do every single day, that's what matters. When you wake up next week and you go in to work, you strap on a gun and a badge, that's work. That's hard. But you know what? I've also heard from so many people about how much it means to them. I can't tell you, every year, it's our fifth conference, every year, I meet more and more people that share from their hearts. And some have gone to tears. Big guys, tough guys, like you, and you, Mac. Seriously, big, tough guys. That's the power. And the power of this organization right here, of these two, no one works harder than these guys do. Again, as Mark said earlier, it's nights, it's weekends, it's whenever they can do it. And they come through every single time, now 102 episodes. So let's give a hand to these guys.
I like when Doug says to me, hey, Mike, I want you to say that over. Here's what I want you to say. And he'll go on for like 5 minutes. Okay, this is what you're going to say. And I'm like, I lost you at hello. Could you slow it down a little? Hey, you know what? Can I?
Yeah, you got a story you wanted to share.
It's a feel-good story, and I wanted to share it just in the news the last couple of days. So about 4 years ago for Christmas, my children got me set up a Carroll Brothers Foundation. And it was a scholarship program for Leo High School, which is on the south side of Chicago. It's 95% minority. Most of the kids go to college. And it was in honor of my dad, went to Leo. He was murdered when I was 11. And my two brothers who passed with cancer, and myself. And over the last 3 or 4 years, we've raised a few dollars, over $10,000 for scholarships for Leo High School. Well, Tuesday night, their choir was on America's Got Talent, and they won, and they're going to the semifinals. Yeah. Yeah. And what happened, reason I brought it up this morning, I talked to somebody at Leo, is that a lady out of Atlanta saw the America's Got Talent on Tuesday night and donated $100,000 for a college scholarship, because 95% of the kids that go to Leo High School go on to college, and she donated $100,000 scholarship. So. Awesome. So thank you for letting me share that.
Well, folks, I don't know a better way to end the podcast episode here today with that, and that is awesome news. Before we go, I know we're standing between you and lunch, but we just want to say thank you. Like I said, what you guys do, it's an honor for me and Mike to have these positions and represent this organization. But it's really about you guys. We really appreciate what you're doing. Please be safe out there. You know, I don't need to tell you to work hard. You guys work hard. You play hard. Thank you for what you do. And let's enjoy the rest of the conference. All right. So, Mike, real quick, where can people subscribe?
Oh, man. Well, I go to Spotify. That's where I listen to all my podcasts. Go there and sign up. We'd love to have you as part of our Protectors Army. We'd love to have you on board. What about if they want to contact us?
You can send us an email at protectorspodcast@iafci.org. So, hey, guys, thanks. And, Katie, thank you for being on
the podcast
with us.
Thanks for having me.
So
it's a blast. Thank you.
We haven't figured out marshals versus postal inspectors.
Oh, I think I heard Mike agree.
You're right.
I'd say I'm wrestling.
All right. All right, guys. Well, listen, I'm Mark Solomon, president of the IFCI. I'm signing off from the incredible city of Oklahoma.
And this is Mike Carroll, international chairman. I'm signing off.
Okay, Katie. Try it.
Okay, I'm signing off too.
All right, there you go.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. Remember, as you join the fight to protect our citizens, you're not alone. With more than 6,500 members from around the world, the men and women of the IAFCI are standing together with you. To learn more or to join the IAFCI, please visit our website at www.iafci.org. The Protectors Podcast is produced by Modified Media and is available for free wherever you listen to podcasts. The hosts and guests' opinions are their own and do not reflect those of management, employers, or sponsors. Listeners are encouraged to contact law enforcement if they suspect being a victim of a crime.